Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, Lucas. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb sparkles here underway.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
The new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Andy DeBarrett. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time, patience.
Good Skittles time. You're never too old for Skittles.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boston Sports Beat here on H4TV. My name is Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, and I am your host. I am joined this time by my colleague Xander Manning. He is back for us. We missed him last time as he was getting his wisdom teeth out. We are glad to have you back from, I guess, the radio version of the DL, Xander. So, but we're all glad to have you back.
Well, I'm glad to be back, Jesse.
Yep. And let's not waste any more time. Let's get right down into the thick of things and let's talk some Boston sports. So we're going to start with the Boston Bruins. We're going to try and get this done fast because they're in the middle of a game right now against the New York Rangers. And they're doing pretty well for themselves. Last I checked, they were up 3-0 over the Rangers at the end of the first period with two goals coming from Milan Lucic and one goal coming from Carl Soderberg. So some pretty good news for the Bruins, who could use some good news given that they've been on a six-game losing streak of late and starting to fall out of playoff contention. It's, you know, it's been a week of rough news for the Boston Bruins. They lost Dougie Hamilton, who has been out indefinitely with an undisclosed injury. A bit of a bright spot, though, in the week as they got back center David Krejci on Thursday night, though he started on the wing on the first line with Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand. So a lot of craziness going on with the Bruins right now. So, Xander, my question to you is, with the loss of Hamilton and at the same time with the return of David Krejci, what's sort of the net impact here? What's sort of the net gain and loss here for the Bruins?
Well, you're losing Dougie Hamilton. You're losing a great defenseman, but at the same time, you're losing an offensive defenseman, but you're also getting an offensive forward. So it's kind of a trade-off the same way. You're kind of losing, but you're gaining what you're losing at the same time, so it's kind of balancing both of them out. You're losing a guy who's been great on the power play, who's been scoring consistently all season, but then you get Krejci back, and you get a guy who's been hurt a lot this season, but he's also a good guy on the power play. So to be completely honest, I don't know what to make of this. I mean, you're losing a guy who's been playing all year, and then you're gaining a guy who hasn't played all year, but they're both quite consistent. So I think it's a trade-off. It's a good thing you're getting Krejci back, but it's not necessarily a bad or good thing that you're losing Hamilton.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you talk about the power play because – on that Thursday night, Krejci did step right into that exact spot that Hamilton had on the first power play, you know, taking that sort of point position alongside Torey Krug. And he got two assists from that spot, assisted on both of the Bruins' goals in that heartbreaking 3-2 overtime loss to the Ducks. So he just really just sort of slotted right into that spot that Hamilton held. So it really is just sort of like you say, it's just sort of like they lost a guy who's good on both the offensive and defensive end, and they got someone back who can play both ends pretty well as well. So it is sort of, you know, like, yeah, they lost someone really
good. The thing I like about Krejci, though, is it looks like he's trying to be more flexible to help out this team in the long run, too, which I like. Dougie Hamilton, he's only been playing one way all season. He's been playing the offensive defenseman. Before he got hurt, Krejci was just playing the center, and now he's playing a wing, and I think he's trying to be more open to the Bruins style. He wants to push for the playoffs. He wants to make the playoffs this year, and that's I like seeing that. So you're definitely gaining some momentum and some sort of maybe a morale boost with Krejci coming back.
Yeah. I think that's just kind of the difference that you get when you get back a veteran player like Krejci. I mean, Krejci's been with the team for a while. You know, he's been to the playoffs plenty of times. You know, Hamilton's been to the playoffs a couple times, but he's been to the playoffs as more of a backline defenseman, not a guy who was a big impact player. You know, Krejci's been to the playoffs as a guy that you would count on. And he's
Krejci was the guy
you
counted on when Horton got hurt in the 2011 Stanley Cup run. He was one of those guys you counted on to score the goals or to set up the goals. He's got experience. I like the experience that you're getting back. You're definitely getting some experience with this.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a trade-off in a number of ways. You're losing Dougie Hamilton, who has got who's had all the youth, all the momentum, has been playing all season. You're getting Krejci back, who has had his injury issues all season. But at the same time, you're also getting back an experienced veteran who can certainly help his team when they're in a very tough playoff race right now. As they are in a very tough playoff race, they are currently tied in terms of points for that very coveted eighth spot in the Eastern Conference with the Ottawa Senators, but they do currently lose that tiebreak, and they have one less game left to play than the Senators do, so bit of a tough spot for the Bruins. And on that note, I want to ask you your thoughts, Sander. What are the Bruins' chances that they get into the playoffs this year, right now, as things stand?
Let's just look at this, ready? Let's look at the rest of their schedule for the rest of the season. They have to play the Rangers today, but then they have to play the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Red Wings, the Leafs, the Capitals, the Panthers, and then the Lightning again. That is a very, very rough schedule. I say that their chances are maybe slim at best. I wouldn't necessarily rule them out or say, oh, no, they're completely done, because it's the Boston Bruins. You never know what you're going to get out of this team. But they've been playing so inconsistent all year, I'm not going to say that they're going to make the playoffs either, because one day they'll score five goals against a team like the Ducks or something like that, or maybe the Penguins. They beat the Penguins one day, and then the next day you lose 2-0 to the Capitals. I mean, come on. Do you want to make some sense this year? I don't think so. And then let's look at what the Senators have left in their season. The Senators, let's see, they're playing the Leafs. And after that, they play the Leafs again, the Panthers, the Red Wings. It's pretty much the same schedule, but the Senators have been playing a lot more consistent hockey. They have goal scorers like Kyle Turris, who's been on fire all season. They've had guys coming up from Binghamton on fire. The Bruins have had guys who have come up, had a little scoring burst, and gone down. If you want to talk about it, Riley Smith, there we go, perfect example right there. But the Bruins have been struggling, and I'm not going to rule them out, but I'm not going to say they're going to make it at the same time.
Well, I will say this. They seem to be off to a good start with that tough schedule, you said, with this game against the Rangers. I think if they pull this off, the one weird thing that's been going on with the Bruins is when they're hot, they are very hot. They go on these long win streaks that give you a real sense of hope for this team that maybe they can sneak into the playoffs. When they're not, they go on these long losing streaks like they've been having, and they make you think that this season's going to be a bust. I think they're due for a winning streak. I think this game against the Rangers, if they can pull it out, you know, it's just the way things have been going, you just never know what's going to happen in the last minute of the game. But I think if they can pull this out against the Rangers, I think it could be just what they need to go on a winning streak and maybe sneak their way into the playoffs. That's just my thoughts. Maybe I'm just the optimist here, but, you know, that's just my thoughts.
Well, I'm not trying to say be a Debbie Downer here, but also one thing I want to point out with this team, they can beat the very good teams. Like, they've beaten the Islanders. They've beaten the Penguins. They've beaten the teams in the top three. They've beaten the Predators of all teams this season. But then you put them against Buffalo and they lose in the shootout. If you can't beat teams like Buffalo, but you can beat the really good teams, then that says a lot about how inconsistent a team can be, though.
No, the inconsistency makes it hard to predict, but I think they're a team of momentum, and I think the momentum is about to swing their way. That's my call, you know, that's my feeling on it. But on that note, we are about to head to a commercial break. But don't go away. We'll be right back to talk some more Boston sports. We've got to talk some Celtics, some Red Sox, and some Patriots. so don't go away.
Now I'm here. Now I'm there.
Your host, Jesse McGill, and I am still joined by my colleague, Xander Manning, and we are going to talk some more Boston sports. We're going to move on to the Celtics, another team that is still in the playoff hunt, and we're going to talk about a guy named Isaiah Thomas. This is a guy who, you know, the Celtics missed for a little bit after he suffered a bad back injury after a bad fall against the Miami Heat. He came back this week against none other than the Miami Heat on Wednesday. Didn't have the strongest first game back. You know, he struggled making his shots. You know, looked a little rusty. But then last night, played against the New York Knicks, and he came back strong, led the team, had 18 points, added on 6 assists to that performance. So looks like he's shaking the rust off pretty quickly, and it looks like he's back. So, Xander, now that Isaiah Thomas is back, what does this mean for the Celtics?
Well, I mean, you said the Celtics missed him, but I'm honestly going to have to disagree with you on that. I mean, they missed consistent wins, but they still won without him. That says a lot about this team. That in past years, if one of the star players got hurt, the Celtics would cave, and they'd be like, okay, he's out. We're just going to lay down and just wait till he comes back. This team did not give up. This team said, he's gone. Okay, so what? They kept on playing. They still played with heart. They still won games without him. I love that about this team. And then he comes back against the Heat. If this first came back, I cut him some slack for that. You're not just going to come back from an injury and automatically be the star of the team again. But then he comes back against the Knicks, and it's almost like he never got hurt. This team plays great. They beat the Knicks 96-92, and I think this team is on track for the playoffs. I think not just because of the way Isaiah Thomas has been playing, but the way Evan Turner has been playing, the way Kelly Olynyk has been playing. This team is a playoff contention team. That maybe they'll get the 7th or 8th seed and they squeak into the playoffs, but I think they're in the playoffs, and they're the underdog going into the playoffs too.
Yeah. And, I want to talk about the guy that you brought up, Evan Turner. You know, this is a guy who's had such an up-and-down season, but when Isaiah Thomas went down, he really did step up. He had some great performances. I believe he put up a triple-double one of those games. You know, Evan Turner, he's one of those guys that was brought in over the offseason. There were some real question marks. There were some real doubters saying, oh, he's washed up. He didn't do great. He didn't do that great with the Pacers. Why are they bringing him in? This is such a weird signing. But then he's come in, and he's actually done pretty well. He hasn't been a star or anything like that. He hasn't turned into an amazing scorer or anything like that. But, you know, he's produced when they've needed him to produce. And I think that says a lot. And it says that maybe, just maybe, he might be a part team's future. He's sort of on the fence, but he might be a part. You know, the backcourt's a little crowded right now, but he's making a real case for himself.
I mean, you could argue the question marks surrounding him about why we signed him is because he was playing under Paul George. I mean, if you play under a guy like that, you really can't be a star. You're playing under Paul George and Danny Granger. That's very tough to be a star out there. But when you're looking at a developing team and a team that went from, oh, we're going to develop and build our team up at the beginning of the season to a team that's in the playoff hunt, like the Celtics are right now, then you can emerge and try to make a name for yourself and try to Celtics are basically doing what the Pacers did. The Pacers were in the Celtics' position. Then they became good, and they basically switched positions this year. Pacers are mediocre. The Celtics are in the playoff hunt.
Yep. And let's talk a little about the playoff hunt that the Celtics are in right now, because they are currently in eighth place. They are currently in a playoff spot right now. They're just a half game ahead of the Brooklyn Nets. They're less than two games ahead of three different teams in the Eastern Conference. So a real tight playoff race, but I'm hearing a lot of optimism about you, and that just tells me a lot. When I hear about people's thoughts on the Celtics, when I hear about people's thoughts on the Bruins, that just tells me a lot about what perspective does, because you think about the Bruins, they have a winning record. They've been in the playoff spot for most of the season. You look at the Celtics, they've been out of a playoff spot for most of the season until recently, and they have a losing record. And yet people sound so much more optimistic when they talk about the Celtics than they do about the Bruins. And I think the reason for that is you look at where the Bruins were last year and where the Celtics were last year. The Celtics have made leaps and bounds, whereas the Bruins have just, you know, made such a decline.
They made leaps and bounds
and I think
downward.
Exactly. So I think that's just a lot about the perspective. Also, I hate to say this again because I sound like a broken record, it says a lot about the Eastern Conference and the NBA. But, you know, that the Celtics are able to get in, but still. So given that the Celtics do currently have a playoff spot by the skin of their teeth, what do they need to do to hold on to it? And maybe, as you were alluding to before, perhaps get even a seventh spot in the playoffs?
Well, they've got a pretty rough schedule towards the end of the season, I got to say. They have to play the Cavaliers back-to-back, and then they have to play the Pacers and the Clippers right before that. I mean, I said the Pacers are mediocre, but I still think they're a team that will give the Celtics a little bit of trouble. They're kind of like the Jets for the Celtics. They're a team that the Celtics are always like, oh, crap, about. But they also have to play teams like the Charlotte Hornets, the Bucks, and the Raptors, and the Pistons again. They need to win those easy games, and they need to either grind out at least one win against the Cavaliers or put up a huge fight. I think they need to fight their way into the playoffs, but I think they're still going to make it.
Well, I'm loving the optimism from you on this one, Xander. So, you know, good luck to the Celtics. They've, you know, certainly, like I said, leaps and bounds ahead of where they were last year. Last year, you know, they had Tankapalooza trying to get the top draft pick, and now this year they're trying to get a playoff spot. It really just shows how far the team has come, I think. We're going to move along. We're going to talk about the New England Patriots. Now it's the off season, and we're dealing with owners' meetings and everything right now. So there have been some new rules put in to the NFL, one which is pretty good for safety. You know, the trainers now have the authority to call a timeout if they think a player needs to be checked, which I personally think is pretty good. But what we're going to talk about is another new rule that's been put in, which is a new rule that makes the famous ineligible receiver play that the Patriots used against the Ravens, where they made Shane Vereen ineligible so they could just use four linemen and then deceive the Ravens and get one of their tight ends wide open. They've made that play illegal, which will now be enforced with a 5-yard penalty. So, Xander, what are your thoughts on this new rule?
John Harbaugh, stop complaining. Jesus, if you're an NFL coach, you need to know how to coach against that. If you can't coach against that, then why are you an NFL coach? It's a good play. It's a trick play. What are you going to get rid of next, the flea flicker or the fake punt? Come on. I think this is a complete and utter bull. If you're getting rid of basically, I think it's just stupid. I mean, you should be able to compensate for that. And this is honestly just a bunch of coaches complaining about how the Patriots are so good and they can't coach against them. That's your problem, not the NFL's. Come on.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with you on this one, Xander. I mean, there's a lot of rule changes the NFL has put in over the years. And, you know, a lot of them I do agree with. They put in a lot of ones for safety, and they've significantly reduced the number of concussions and all that. And I'm all for that. I'm all for keeping the players safe and not brain damaged. But with something like this, something that's just, oh, they're too tricky, we can't figure them out. The game, part of the game is about strategy, and deception is part of the fun of that. I mean, when you see a
what
trick
are you
going to
get rid of next? The play action pass?
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like the deception is part of the fun, and coming up with trick plays is entertaining. It's good
I look
for
up
the
on
sport,
YouTube,
and it's
NFL
good for the business.
Trick plays. I look up on YouTube NFL trick plays. I watch them because they're fun to watch. And if fans think
exactly.
they're fun to watch, then stop complaining about it. You're getting money to watch your team made a fool of. It's funny, but in the end, you still have fans. You're not going to lose fans because you can't coach against a team that knows how to make their wide receiver wide open.
Exactly. You
if
know,
I,
was I mean, talking
about,
back
I, would
when...
just, I would just sit back and say, all right, they got the best out of me. I need to look at film and figure out how to do that. So I can exact
yeah.
my revenge. If you can't exact your revenge or you can't coach against it, then don't complain about it. It's the way of life in football.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, like when the Bills, you know, get defeated by the Titans in the Music City Miracle, they don't say you can't throw a lateral all the way across the field. They don't try and complain about that because it's messing things up or anything like that. Or because it's too tricky and we can't cover that all of that part of the field or anything like that. You know, they just, you know, spent their time complaining about how it was actually a forward pass. But they didn't try to change the rules because that's part of the game, you know. And, I mean, if the Ravens want to spend time complaining that, oh, this is, you know, crazy, that they shouldn't be, that you know, or something like that. But, I mean, making it illegal is... just doesn't make any sense to me.
No, you know, I think what their argument is, it's the playoffs and they don't, and what they want to keep integrity with the game and they want to play pure football. That's still pure football. Trick plays are still a part of football. I don't care if it's the playoffs. I don't care if it's the preseason. I don't care if it's the regular season. I don't care if it's a freaking tiebreaker. It's football. Stop complaining.
Exactly. I mean, we've seen playoff games where, you know, they've done trick plays on kickoff returns, like the Music City Miracle. We've seen we've seen Super Bowls where they started off the second half with an onside kick, and everybody loves that, you know?
They'll just look, they're going to get rid of that next. That's going to be the next thing they're going to get rid of.
I don't think they'll get rid of the onside kick until it starts actually consistently working. That's
I will boycott
that's
the NFL if they do.
That's my problem. But that's my thought on that. So with that on that note, we're going to move along. Last week when we had Liam Bevins on the show, we talked a little about all the moves the Patriots have been making in free agency. And we talked about the possibility of Vince Wilfork moving to another team. Well, now it's been made official. Vince Wilfork has signed with the Houston Texans. So after a long and fruitful career with the New England Patriots, where he was just an anchor on the defense, he has, you know, he has departed, and he will now be playing for Houston. So, Xander, what's your thoughts on this? What does this mean for the New England Patriots?
Well, first of all, I just want to say I am terrified of the Texans' defensive line now. J.J. Watt and Vince Wilfork,
Yeah, that's...
Do I smell defensive team of the year? Yes, I do.
They've also got Jadeveon Clowney, a former number one overall pick who faced injury problems last year. But if he can be what everyone thought he was and be on that same defensive line with those two, that's scary.
I mean,
that's
you can
scary.
Talk all you want about that, but the Texans still don't have offense. So I'm sorry, but they don't have offense, so they can't react.
Brian Hoyer. And they have Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett, okay? I think they can pull it off.
You just
like,
listed two quarterbacks, no receivers or any running backs.
Arian
Foster might be gone, Andre Johnson might be gone. So, yeah. Good luck. All right. But what I think about how it impacts the Patriots. I mean, Robert Kraft, I'm sorry. What are you doing? What are you doing? The defense, I mean... Okay, if Jerod Mayo comes back, it's not going to be entirely horrible. Jerod Mayo is a great rusher. He's going to be great for the Patriots. But who do you have to back up Wilfork? Do you have Isaac Sapuaga in your back pocket? No, you don't. I mean, Kraft's got to see something in the draft class or on this team that he likes. I don't personally. I think it's a stupid move to just let Wilfork leave. But if he sees something that I don't, then I applaud him, but I really don't see anything, so I don't see any logic with this at all.
Well, I mean, there is sort of something that can be understood about this. Wilfork is getting on in age. He was starting to decline in his level of play. He was starting to get hurt a little more than he used to. So I can see from a cold business standpoint where they would make this move. And we are starting to see some defensive tackles on this team that do have some sorts of potential. Maybe not Wilfork-level potential, but some potential. You know, Seal for Salinga had a pretty good year. Alan Branch had his moments. You know, Dominique Easley, if he can get healthy next year, maybe. And so they do have some options.
You can't replace the big man, though.
I'm not saying replace him. I'm saying, you know, maybe, you know,
fit in the role.
Maybe just recreate. Maybe just, maybe just sort of come close to recreate him. I mean, the Patriots, when it's the time has come, they've typically known when to let go of aging stars, whether it's Richard Seymour or Mike Vrabel. We've all gotten upset when he's let them go. And, you know, typically things tend to work out and the Patriots always tend to make the playoffs the next year.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. I mean, there are some times when I'm just like, okay, this is not a good move. This is a dumb move. You guys are going too far with letting all your defensive guys go. But there are some times when it's like, you know, this is a legitimate move. You know, these guys are aging stars, they're on the decline, and they're asking for too much money, probably wise. And this one, maybe. You know, no disrespect to Wilfork, he's done great stuff for the Patriots. And, you know, he's just been the face of that defense and carried them for years. But maybe it's time. Who knows? But on that note,
maybe.
As we've only got about, what?
Maybe. You never know.
Yeah. But on that note, we've only got about 3 minutes left on our show. I want to make sure we get to the Red Sox because we've got a possible big issue here with the closer, Koji Uehara. He's battling a strained hamstring right now, and John Farrell has said that there's growing concern over whether or not he'll be ready for opening day. You know, on Thursday they said he made some strides forward. He was throwing some warm-ups. He was, you know, doing some jogging or something like that. So there's some hope, but, you know, given that there is this much concern over whether or not you'll have your closer for opening day, what does this mean for the Boston Red Sox center?
I think I don't really see how it impacts them too much, honestly. Koji's a great closer. He's been consistent for the 2 years he's been here. But they've got a bunch of guys who can back him up very easily. They've got Alexi Otondo now. They've got Edward Mujica. I mean, Mujica stepped up when he needed to. And like you said, it's a hamstring injury. So you can have Mujica step in for however long you need. You can have Ogando step in for as long as you need. And then just have Koji come back when he needs to. I don't see this impacting them too much unless
I
end up doing something else.
I disagree with you on this one. I disagree with you on this one, Xander. I've heard this optimism before about, you know, oh, if we lost this closer, he was hurt, but it's okay. We've got other guys on this bullpen who pitch effectively. They bring in these other guys, and then they bust, and we have something like, you know, what we had in 2012 where we lost all our closers, and then we had to rely on Alfredo Aceves, who was horrible. You know, and if we didn't have Koji the past couple of years, our bullpen would have been just an absolute mess. So I think it's a real big deal that they've lost Koji Uehara. That's just my personal thoughts on it. But just very quickly, what's your last thoughts on it?
I still stand behind it. I think Koji, like you said, Wilfork's getting old. Koji's getting old. Koji's going to be, 40 at the end of this year? He's getting a little bit older himself. He's been pitching for a while himself. But like I said, Ogando and Mujica, I think those are two guys who can step up this year. I mean, they've had a good spring for both. Both of them have had a good spring. They're both pretty good. And it's a hamstring injury. It shouldn't affect him too much. He's a closer, and he pitches probably, every 4 days or something like that. Maybe
yeah.
Give him a little bit of rest. Let someone else save a few games.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us here at the Boston Sports Beat. For Xander Manning, I am Jesse Mayfield. Thanks for tuning in.